Hey friends, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Evolving Man podcast. On this episode, I interview a friend from California. His name is Jetty Azuma. Jetty is plugged in with the men's community down there, and he's doing some really great work. I went on his podcast, the Rising Man podcast, last month, and we had a really great conversation. So I was stoked to have him on the show and talk about all things related to men's work, and particularly initiation. Jetty's involved with some pretty cool stuff with initiation, and he gives us his perspective on that and on what needs to change and how we can improve the way that men are integrating into society and into families and into each other's lives. So I had a really great conversation with him. It was broken up by a few technical difficulties, and funny enough, my microphone ended up, you know, choosing the wrong microphone in the room, but I think we've pieced it together just fine, and I'm sure you'll enjoy what Jetty has to say. So thanks for tuning in, folks. As always, please share the podcast with people that you think might benefit from it, and leave a review, subscribe, and thanks so much to everybody for supporting my work here. This is totally a labor of love, and I try to just have authentic conversations with inspiring people and just uplift society and make the world a better place. So thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing, and love you all. Enjoy the show. Inspiring conversations for the modern man. The Evolving Man Podcast. And we're live. Thanks for coming on the show, Jetty Azuma. It's really good to have you with me. This is our second attempt. And Jetty, I'm really stoked to have you on the show, man. You run this show called The Rising Man Podcast. And you're just burning out content, releasing so much for people. And I respect your perseverance. I respect your content. And yeah, it's just good to see your face this morning, man.
Yeah. Well, thank you, brother. Honored to be on here. And I just love having these conversations, man. That's really what it comes down to. I love having these conversations, and people keep telling me that they're getting value from it. So crank away.
Keep doing it. Keep doing it. Yeah. Good. Cool, man. So yeah, what I want to ask you is, for the people, what are you doing right now in your life that is on purpose? What's your purpose right now?
Well, I always love getting this question because it's never the same. It's never exactly the same answer. But in this moment, what my attention is on, if I reduce it to the simplest component, is creating a generation of initiated men. And when I say initiated men, I'm talking about men who have been ceremonially passed from boyhood into manhood with a rite of passage, with a ritual. My belief is that we have a lot of boys walking around in man's bodies in the world because they've never been formally welcomed into manhood. They've never had it modeled for them, or what they have had modeled for them hasn't been the version of men that we need. So my commitment is to create an entire cohort of men who have the shared experience of ritually declaring their passage into manhood and being received on the other side by a community of men. So that's that's the simple foundation of it all. There's a lot more that comes from that, though.
Yeah, man. I just get super stoked when I hear you say that. You definitely belong on my show. Yeah. Thank you for doing that work. And this is awesome. Let's talk about it. Yeah. So what are you doing to create that?
Well, there's some different layers of it, man. It started with the Rising Man podcast, which evolved from having sat in men's circles for about 10 years. And really doing some deep men's work over the past 5 to 7. When I left New York, where I was living, and came to California, I was looking for mentorship for men because I wasn't finding it in New York City. It was a bunch of myself and a bunch of other 20-something-year-old guys trying to lead each other and not knowing where to go.
Right.
So coming out to California, finding that mentorship, guys that were 30, 20, 30, 40 years ahead of me, it gave me a perspective of life I hadn't had before. And so the past 5 to 7 years, I've been looking for different ways to make that available to men across the world. So there we go with the Rising Man podcast. Let's just start the conversation of what it means to be a man in this world. Discovery, because I only have my perspective. I don't believe that my perspective is the only one. So what do we all think that it means to be a man in the world? And then when we come to some sort of, when we get some research, then how do we become the men that we want to be in the world? because yeah. that's just talking about it. So then, you know, creating virtual circles with, we have our Rising Man Fire circles, and now taking men out into the wilderness and having them fast for 4 days and four nights to get clear on their vision and their life and what they want. Doing events like we were just talking about, Call of the Warrior, where we're getting men in touch with their expression, revealing who they really are on the inside and expressing that energy in a very, with command over that energy instead of just letting it explode on everybody.
Yeah.
Some of how that's coming into the space right now.
Awesome. I want to talk about some of that stuff. Yeah. Let's talk about Call of the Warrior. Like, I don't remember. I think Steve, my best friend, told me about this a couple months ago. He's like, yo, this guy, Jetty Azuma down in California is leading this like haka workshop for 100 guys. Uh-huh. And we were just like beaming about it and dreaming about having something like that up here. So like, yeah. tell me about it. Tell me how it went.
Yeah. Well, for context purposes, haka, H-A-K-A, means breath of fire. Ha is breath, like the breath of life, and ka, fire. So the haka is a ceremonial war dance of the Maori people, who were the indigenous Polynesian people that made it to what colonial people call New Zealand. And so this is an ancient practice, an ancient tradition that they have. And what we did is I brought over a couple of my brothers from New Zealand, Leon Ruri and Jamie Schuster, to teach us how to perform the haka. Now, if you've never seen it or heard of it, it's a warrior dance. It's like a battle challenge. So this is something that Maori warriors would do. They would take turns squaring off and issuing a challenge. It's like the most badass throwing down of the gauntlet that you've ever seen.
Right.
In modern times, since we're not living in wartime, right? Necessarily, and not in our home state, the haka is used more for, you see it in rugby matches. So the All Blacks, the national, New Zealand's national rugby team, it's big in that culture. But there's also hakas that are done to honor people who passed away, honor people who are visiting for the first time, esteemed guests. So what we did is we brought these guys over and we created a men's workshop to figure out what is it that we're not expressing. Because we believe that the astronomical rates of male suicide, the ridiculous numbers of men who are depressed, who are feeling unfulfilled in their lives, is out of control because we've been taught not to express ourselves.
Right.
So in the morning, we do some activities to tap into what that is, creating a really safe and trusting space. And then in the afternoon, we learn to haka. And man, if you got to see the videos, man, by the time this goes out, we'll have something to post up. But, and then we performed. Here's the cool thing is we were doing it in LA, and we did all the work, and the culmination of it was to perform the haka in unison, 32 men together at the old Muscle Beach. So where Arnold Schwarzenegger and all those guys used to pump iron. And it was kind of serendipitous how that became our location. We were going to do it somewhere down the road a little bit. And then this one was better because we realized we were literally alchemizing the masculine energy that had been in that space for so long.
Yeah.
And carrying a new version of the masculine there. So it was powerful, man. It was incredible and beyond what I ever imagined.
That is so cool. Yeah. And not just like, I say that like such a geek, like that is so cool, man. But what I feel when I'm saying that is the embodiment piece that you're speaking to of like just really feeling like fully alive in your body. Like that's, I love that. And the guys that I know love that. And we yearn for that. And I'm so lucky just living in Vancouver where we have a lot of stuff going on in men's circles, but it's so, like, I almost just want to say non-existent or dead in so much of my country and your country where there's so much disconnection between men and guys are disconnected from each other, but they're also disconnected from themselves, like their own embodiment. And like you said, like it's not okay to express yourself in any kind of like really an intense way.
Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah.
That's like the headline, right? Is men, we don't express ourselves. We've learned not to express ourselves. A lot of people get that. But what's really happening, I know for myself, I was afraid of my masculine energy for a long time. I was afraid of that energy that feels like anger, that feels like rage, that energy that tells me I know I could kill someone or something that was threatening me or my family. I was afraid of that for my entire adult life until just the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because I was afraid of letting that out, not wanting to hurt people, I compressed it inward. And that's just me. Now I know that there's people out there in the world, men, women, children, older, younger, whatever, who are afraid of that masculine energy because of what it's done historically.
Mm-hmm.
Undisciplined masculine energy is destructive.
It's dangerous.
Period. Yeah. It's dangerous, yeah. but we've just put a broad stroke over masculine energy altogether. Because it's beautiful to see a warrior in his expression. In fact, I always think about LeBron James hitting the game-winning shot when he jumped up on the table and he was roaring and beating his chest and spitting. Yeah. And everybody's like, yeah, because yeah. they love it. It's beautiful to see a man in his full expression.
Yeah.
If it's in a certain context. But if I did that in the street right now.
Everybody's running. Everybody's running. The cops are coming.
Yeah, I'm in cuffs in less than 5 minutes. You know? So that's the disconnect that's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And we need to find a reconnect. And I think there's, I don't want to turn the corner too much, but there's a lot of heady intellectualization about masculinity mm-hmm. and about what it is and what toxic masculinity is right now. Mm-hmm. And
I fucking hate that word, by the way.
Me too,
toxic
man.
Toxic masculinity.
And there's a lot of fear like that. It's, I know that like people are trying to change something and that abuses of power have occurred and that what you and I are talking about actually could fall under that fictional, title of toxic masculinity around mm-hmm. it's not okay for men to express themselves. Mm-hmm. But there is a lot of criticism and headiness around what the problem is. And there's not a lot of talk around like, how do we get back to nature in a good way? How do we get back to our nature in a good way? There's a lot of just like finger pointing going on and yep. talking about the problem. And of course we got to talk about the problem, but like I was on this panel last night at this, a wrap up party for something called Men Who Take Baths, which is really cool. Actually, it's on Instagram. You just look up Men Who Take Baths and, this girl, Nicole Hodges, this woman, she started this project to talk to men about this stuff. And she runs them a bubble bath and then she interviews them like podcast style. And yeah, like there was a lot of this sort of like mental masturbation going around the room when I was on this panel last night about toxic masculinity and what it is. And like, and then out of the back, somebody said, listen, like I'm a transgendered person. And from my view, like everybody's talking about something that they don't understand because we don't know what this thing is. Like nobody agrees on what toxic masculinity is because everybody has a different view of masculinity for sure. I mean, yeah. toxic is kind of it's still kind of a broad thing, but like you're aligning masculinity with men synonymously and those aren't mm-hmm. the same thing. And, exactly. and then we're having conversations about it and like what needs to change in the world. But like, we don't even know what we've defined here. And the message that men are getting is that masculinity is toxic. And I know that may have not been the original intention of the creation of that word, but man, it seems to be just creating more of a mess. And, yeah. and like we need to get back to the solution, which is like, what's the way forward? What's the like natural grounded way forward? And in many ways, like what you're doing is like the almost ancient way forward. It's like, what's the, you probably have a better word for it, but
culture. That's yeah. the answer. Culture yeah. is the answer. So many of us are missing out on culture because we're the children, we're the descendants of migrant peoples, people who immigrated here, who as part of assimilating, had to detach and release from their culture. Not everybody, but a lot of us. I
yeah,
know for
almost,
me.
Virtually all. Yeah.
My grandparents are from Italy and Japan. And some of those traditions, like some of the food, some of the words, especially like the curse words. but aside from that, not much culture. And I'm not the only one. So people without a culture have nothing that connects them to the big picture. It's living inside of us. It's in our DNA, but we don't have that. And so people without a culture don't know how to respect other cultures, don't know how to respect each other. Yeah. We don't have a culture for healthy masculinity. We don't mm-hmm. have a way that we initiate our boys into men. We don't have shared conversation and practices around what this is. So that was actually a perfect example. That was like a microcosm of society, global society, is everybody's talking about different things with different ideas of what it is because nobody knows. We don't have any agreement on it. Yeah. And that's good. The dialogue's good. And I love that there's a transgender person in there that says, hey, stop talking about men and women when you mean masculine and feminine, because that doesn't apply to me.
Yeah.
What a gift to have that person in the room to remind us of that.
Huge. Yeah.
So that's my opinion anyway.
Yeah, man, that's it. It's culture. And there's, in that conversation, there's a lot of blame and a lot of like, same thing. I see a lot of finger pointing and trying to figure out who's responsible. But like, when you look at history, you can blame a lot of people, but in the end, it's like, what you're saying is most of the people that came to this land, they all came having to drop their culture and to pick up something new and to just survive, right? Like my ancestors came fleeing a famine in the Ukraine.
There you go.
You know, and they were just like running for their lives. They're just running for their lives.
Yeah. They didn't want you to lose your culture. They just wanted to be able to have you survive. They wanted to be able to take care of their kids. Like that's okay. I mean, I think it's a matter of shifting our mindset from a problem to what's the opportunity here.
Yeah.
What's the opportunity that we have in this moment? Yeah. I mean, the opportunity that is we can create culture. We can create culture. If there was a break in the chain, you know, like you're climbing a rope and the rope breaks, you can either cry about the fact that you fell on your ass, or you can make a new rope, tie it up and keep climbing again. So I think that, speaking of masculine, right? Masculine is oriented around solution. So I think talking about initiating men, talking about creating generations of men who have this shared experience, we can recreate starting now, and we can be the first link in that chain. And then years and years and years from now, our great, great, great grandsons will speak about the time when men took a stood for that and recreated this cycle.
Yeah.
So, and not every culture has lost it. There's, you know, talk about Aboriginal cultures, their rites of passage rituals go back tens of thousands of years. They've been doing the same thing. So what can we learn from them? And then what can we create for the rest of us who haven't had that?
Yeah. And many of those are hanging on by a thread because of the destruction of those cultures, but they're hanging on and some of them are rebuilding. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like what you're saying. And yeah, my message on top of that is we need leaders. Like we need more leaders like you leading the way, creating things and just like moving in the right direction. And we need men to join the leaders. Like we don't all need to be leaders. But like we need guys on board. Like we can't change the culture if we all just keep doing the same thing. And, you know, oftentimes when I'm talking to guys about men's work and getting into men's groups, it's about like, well, here's what benefits you'll get from this, but there's also a cultural benefit. There's a cultural shift that you're contributing to. And I think for some guys, like that actually could be a really good motivator to get in and like, oh, I'm participating in like, I am being the change that I want to see in the world by getting into community with men that is intentional and that is like embodied, getting in touch with the warrior spirit, adhering to a code of living and like learning, untangling and I wanted to say decoupling, but like de-threading all of the threads that need to be undone so that you can be free and connected to another guy. Or a group of guys. Yeah, I was saying like men joining a movement to you're bettering humanity by like getting into communion with other men and joining the movement and doing your own work.
Yeah. I mean, that's the message I carry too. You know, especially when we talk about making a distinction between boy and man, neither of whom are one is not better than the other. Let's say that first, because I think a lot of us, we try to distance ourselves from our boy. But the boy, in my opinion, is one who is being taken care of by the community. Boy needs to be taken care of by the village, is being prepared to become a man, but isn't not yet ready to take care of other people. He's learning to take care of himself. And then the man flips and does a 180 and knows how to take care of his own needs. So he also has room and space to take care of the community, of the village. And so if we look at it in that perspective, if you're examining joining a men's group or signing up for a course or training a workshop, and your only conversation in your head is what's in it for me, then I would say that's your boy talking. That's the part of you that still is only looking out for yourself. And that's also the job of guys like us, is to say, hey, look at the big picture here. What would it mean? What if I told you that you were a part of a culture shift that will affect generations for thousands of years? Because that's what we're building here. That's our intention. We can't guarantee that, but that's the flame that we're lighting right now. And if that doesn't shift the conversation in your head, then I'd say you still have some work to do.
Yeah. So still get into the men's group because you got the work to do.
Yeah, but at least look at that, right? At least look at that for yourself and have a really honest conversation. Yeah, you know what? I am just thinking about what's in it for me. That is where I am. That's okay. But let's own that that's the part of the process that you're in.
Yeah.
Because we've all been there, and it's natural to think about yourself. You know, that's like the job of the ego, is to what do I need to do to keep this being alive?
Mm-hmm.
But we put a lot of emphasis on that. And if we never grow out of that, then we can never really take care of a family, take care of a community, have a business and take care of your customers. It's all self-serving.
Yeah. And there's just something special, like there's something special about men calling each other out on that stuff, mm-hmm. you know, and in a safe space, you can get so much done in a man's life with a circle of trusted guys that normally would not get through to a person, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, tell me about, I want to talk about your initiation. I want to say weekends, but it's longer than a weekend. Like tell me about your initiation ceremonies that you do with guys. This is really cool.
Yeah. So, I always like to honor legacy. I was taught to do this work, by a man named Kent Pierce and Farian Pierce. And, Farian, she's a woman. They were previously coupled. And they learned from Stephen Foster and Meredith Little, who are from the School of Lost Borders here in California. Essentially, it's a community of people who fast, go out for a week altogether. But essentially, they fast for 3 or 4 days without food as an offering to receive a vision, to receive a message, to receive insight, clarity, whatever you want to call it, into your life. So they've been doing this work for over 20 years here in the county where I live. And I went on my fast back in 2014. My wife fasted back in, I think, 2009 before we met. And the power of that experience for me, just getting as a 27-year-old man, going out and spending that for the first time in my life, having a deep conversation with my environment, mm-hmm. having a deep conversation with myself, because there was no other distractions. You don't bring books. You don't bring a guitar so you can jam out while you're passing the time. You're going deeply introspective. And we give up food as an offering. You're giving something up in exchange to receive something. You can't ask for or pray for a vision if you're not willing to give something up. Mm-hmm. So in that way, it's a sacrifice. You're also giving up connection with other people so that all those distractions are removed. And so that part of my life, combined with what the value that I've gotten from sitting in men's circles for the past 10 years, I saw there's a need for men to have a space where they feel safe enough to show who they are, the circle, and then an experience, a formal ritual or ceremony of fully declaring their manhood and asking for, who am I in service to my community? Yeah. What is the gift that I have in me to give back to my people? And just those two simple things, having a space to examine what's already happened, and then a ritual or ceremony to declare who they intend to be in their lives. And then the most essential part, a community to receive them on the other side of that and hold them accountable to it.
Yeah.
So it's a really simple formula when you look at it. But there's a lot that goes into it. None of this is easy. None of this is easy work. It's just very simple.
Yeah. And so you go out with like groups of 10 or groups of 20.
Yeah. So far, the biggest group that we've had was 6 guys, and then there's a few facilitators. So, you know, we're 10 to 12 guys out there, but we take up to 10 guys at a time out with a few facilitators. So that's, you know, it's an intimate group. It's an intimate circle.
And no water during the fast?
For this fast, there are fasts where you do no food, no water. For guys who are not accustomed to that, we just do no food.
Right.
And actually, in the ways in which I learned, they always do no food and you can have water. In fact, they encourage drinking a lot of water because it's actually more of a cleansing. You know, you're drinking water so you can keep moving things through and out of your body that need to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done 3 days with water, no food, and out in nature. And it was just a beautiful experience. Beautiful experience. And I noticed like there were times where I really noticed my need to get things done and like to just be doing something. Like I get a lot of dopamine hits from completion of tasks in my life. And sometimes I wake up and I have 30 tasks on my on my phone, and I get excited about it in some ways because I'm like, man, if I could do all of this. And so I noticed that come up too. Like I want to be always doing something, producing something in the world. And there needs to be, I need to find peace in just existence, you know, being out there and just be a part of nature out there and be it's existing. This is something that, it's often happening in small groups. And, I guess I always chalk it up to like, okay, well, there's only that many people that have an appetite for this type of thing. Like what you're describing, but I feel like there's a lot more people that have an appetite. And I think initiation certainly needs to be a more common word.
Yeah. Well, most people don't know it's available, right? It's just the same way you can be hungry and not know that you're hungry. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I'm famished. Like, you know, somebody throw me a burger. You don't even know what you need until it's visible for you. That's how it was. That's how it was for me. I didn't grow up in a community where we initiated boys into manhood. I didn't grow up with any of these rituals or ceremonies. So that's another part of my mission, is to make this conversation more, not public, but more widespread, you know, and carrying it in a reverent way, because that's another risk too. And this is full transparency, a very fine line that I walk. A lot of these spiritual and traditional ways are protected for good reason, for good reason, because when you disseminate medicine out into the world and there's nobody to really hold and ground it in a sacred way that connects those, we were talking about culture before, like a chain link.
Yeah.
If you don't have somebody who is strongly connected to that lineage as a powerful link in the chain, trying to give that medicine, like people who are carrying these sacred medicines around in the world right now, ayahuasca, peyote, jape, all these things, but they're not really connected to the traditions, then they can't really hold the space for somebody who's taking it in.
Yeah.
So there's also a high level of respect and reverence that needs to go into not just rituals and fasting for one, but all medicines, you know, especially plant medicines, because these are really sacred teachers. And if you're spending time with people who are really closely connected to it, there's a high level of respect and reverence for it. It's not, it's almost like a spiritual tourism that's happening.
Yeah.
Right now, because people they didn't know it was available, and it's exciting. It lights something up in them. But reverence and respect and also the willingness to understand and curiosity to go a little deeper is essential.
Yeah, I mean, look at what's happened with tobacco, right? Tobacco is, everybody knows how much destruction tobacco is causing. And this is something that virtually every native culture has considered to be a medicine. And something that they use for prayer. And, you know, meanwhile, we've got just tobacco has turned into this thing that's got talons and is like lashing out and killing people by the hundreds of thousands. And that's one of the best illustrations of what you're talking about, this sort of like untethered, unguided, release of something that can be a medicine that just turns against us. And
yeah,
I agree. There's a line where like if something isn't used properly, it becomes a detriment to us. And there's like the fact that we need this stuff so badly, like men need to be initiated so badly. And like we've never needed more medicine than we need right now. You know, like we've never needed more ayahuasca than we need right now. And I agree. There's like, we need it, and there's a way to do it right, to do it with reverence, and to do it with sustainability. There's obviously all of that. I want to see more men going through initiation. I want to see more young men being initiated. You know, I'm a part of this. I've done this thing called the Young Men's Adventure Weekend up here in BC. 50 young men, 50 men. We go out into the bush. We spend 48 hours out there. We build a camp. We build a fire. We bring a kitchen in there, and we run these guys through a series of challenges in little squad teams. And I can't say most of what happens out there, but the guys come back different. And same thing, like the community of men receives them at the end, and then they come back to their community here. And there's something in California called the Young Men's Ultimate Weekend, which people can look up. Have you ever?
There's a legacy weekend out here that's closely connected to the Sterling legacy of men's work. I haven't been to it personally, but I know a number of men who brought their sons there. And heard wonderful things. So I think I agree with you, man. I think that's important. We all have our role to play. And the way I look at it is, guys in their 20s and their 30s are the ones who tend to listen to what I have to say. I tend to have something valuable for them. And so to me, these are the guys who are new fathers, becoming fathers, will become fathers sometime in the next 10 to 15 years. And if we can initiate those guys and give them the tools that they need, hopefully before they become a dad, before they become a husband, but at least before their sons are coming of age and need more of that masculine presence, then that's where I see my role.
That's it.
Cause I'm helping these fathers help their children and provide a culture and an experience for their young men as they're coming into the world.
Yeah. And let's be real, like one of the highest predictors of a man, not doing well in his life, or Warren Farrell calls a failure to launch, is fatherlessness and not having a father present. And so many young men are growing up with a lack of a father, a father figure in their lives. And guys like me, I grew up with a dad who was there, but he was away at work all the time. And I had my wounds with that, but I had a good compared to what a lot of guys get, where their parents are divorced, their dad's gone. I know so many guys who don't even know their dad, you know? And this is, I mean, what's the cause of that? Like that's a whole 3-hour conversation, but,
well, let's, this is important to jump into for a second. I don't want to derail this, but let's talk about fathering for a second. Cause I had a similar story when I was becoming a young man that my dad wasn't around cause he was working. You know, and just as with any story, it's a matter of perspective. Now, being a father myself, I'm like, damn, my dad was killing it. He was doing everything he had to do to take care of me and my knucklehead brothers and my mom. And so I could tell the story that he wasn't around because he did work a lot. He did travel a lot, but he also demonstrated to me what it looks like to be a provider for a family. All I really wanted was, I just wanted more of my dad. I wanted more masculine presence in my life. But is it appropriate to put all of that on him? Because you don't have to be a father, a biological dad, to father. We need a lot of uncles out there too.
Yeah.
And if I had more uncles around me, other men in my dad's generation and cohort, just to give me something to bounce off of instead of women all day, every day, I think that need would have been satisfied.
Yeah.
But it was because all that pressure was placed on my dad. And then now we're talking about the insulation of families and the fact that we put up walls and fences between each other and our neighbors.
Yeah.
I think that's the bigger issue. So when we talk about fatherlessness, I don't think it's that bio dads are not present for their bio sons. It's that there's not a father archetype present enough in these boys' lives.
Yeah. I hear that. It very much is both. Like statistically, there's so many young men being raised without their fathers present. And like it takes a village to raise a man, not a nuclear family, because everybody's like, we're so busy getting our needs met 90% of our lives. Right.
Yep.
We need to spread the load of caring for young ones and mentorship. And going back to what you're doing, I think by bringing men together and forming men's groups and making men's work normal in our society, we are reducing the amount of fatherlessness that's going to happen, because you end up with fathers who leave the family because guys don't understand their emotional landscape. And so the relationship doesn't work. Right. Or they make decisions that sabotage themselves, their lives, their family, their relationship, and they end up broken out of the family. They end up in jail. And with a group of men to hold a guy, he's so much more likely to work through his issues, find the path forward, the good path forward, and come out the other side.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, man. And just to nail home the point, that's why the saying is it takes a village to raise a man, not it takes a dad to raise a man. You know, in these traditional ways, in indigenous ways, a father cannot initiate his son. The uncles do that. That's the job of the uncles. They create a separation between a father and son. So the work that I'm doing and the selfish component of that is I'm creating a community and a culture so my son can be initiated because I can't do it.
Right.
I can't do it. And I know he's got uncles in his life who they already know. He's 4 years old. He just had his fourth birthday 2 days ago. So, you know, we're talking like less than 10 years. Yeah. My intention is that he may be ready for that experience. And so he's already got uncles who know, hey, this is your job, man. And I've got nephews. I know it's my job because their dads aren't going to be able to bring them out to the mountain and fast them. So the teaching is right there. It's not supposed to be all on dad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And so men need to connect to each other. They need to trust each other. Like it takes a lot to trust another man with your son. Right.
Absolutely.
It takes a lot of letting go on your part. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, but when we can get to that level of trust, you know, how much of these other problems that we have become virtually irrelevant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when we have that level of trust established, you know, how many of these other problems we have in our planet? That they just become irrelevant. They just get wiped away. Exactly. When we can really depend on each other, the solution for global warming, the solution for world hunger, all these problems that seem so massive, they're just waiting for us to start really working together because we've got the solutions. The solutions exist. We're just not willing to drop our own self-interests to take care of the greater whole.
Yeah. So like if I could summarize, like the message that I feel like I'm getting from you is like, take the time, do the work to change your culture, do your own work and do it with other guys.
Yeah. At least that's the best way I've found. My friend likes to say, you know, there's a lot of ways to do this, but this is the right way.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
Great, man. Any other thing that you'd like to, a message that you'd like to get out to my listeners from your side of things? You guys got a lot going on. In some ways I'm jealous. Like I look down at what's going on in California. You guys have all these different things going. Although Samurai Brother, it's killing it. But I see Man Tribe going on down there and I see you organizing the haka and doing initiations. I definitely plan to come down and visit you guys and meet you guys at some point. But what message, anything left that you have?
Yeah, man. Well, there's only one message on my heart that I haven't spoken to yet. And that's a big one. It's safety for women. Because I think that there's two things that we need to create in this world. We need to create freedom for men, freedom for men to be men, to express ourselves, to tap into our raw masculine power. To express our emotions the way we need to and to be supported. And ultimately safety for women. Because until this world feels like a safe place for women, we can't get anything done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the reason, like if you look at the Me Too movement, that has women not feeling safe written all over it for good reason. There's a lot of good reasons for women to not feel safe in this world.
Yeah.
But that's also a mission that we as men can champion. We can be protectors and defenders of safety for women.
Yeah.
And it never became more relevant for me than when my daughter was born. You know, she's 5 months old now. And as soon as we found out we were having a daughter, I've always been vigilant of safety for women, but now I'll die for that.
Right.
I'll die for that because if it doesn't feel like a safe place for her, then she'll never feel safe enough to be beautiful, to be free, to practice the traditions that we pass on in our family. Like these little ones, they need that. And women, when they don't feel safe, they look for ways to destroy and break down the threat.
Yeah.
This is like old ancient primal archetypal stuff. When they feel threatened, when the village is threatened, mama bear comes out.
Yeah.
And sometimes that looks like mama bear completely undressing and unraveling her partner because there's something about her that doesn't feel safe. It may not even be about him.
Yeah.
And then the man starts to hate her because he can't hold the space for her to be in that, what's the word? That irrational feminine emotional space.
Yeah.
So safety for women, freedom for men, they go hand in hand. And I think when we accomplish those things in this lifetime, we'll be able to solve all the rest of the world's problems too. So
That was really good. I really love how you put that in a basket for me around a woman having this intuition around the threat and just intuitively trying to dismantle it, even though she may not even know what she's doing, right? She's just like following her instincts. That's a really beautiful way of putting it.
Yeah. You just read between the lines, man. You know, it's all over social media.
Yeah.
You see women, I mean, especially the posts where women are talking about the patriarchy and, you know, a lot more women, which is, I think is amazing that women are more women are feeling safe enough to share their story about being abused or molested or whatever. When there's an when it seems like there's anger behind it, if you read between the lines, you can see that there's a little girl in there that doesn't feel safe.
Yeah.
And if you saw a little girl that didn't feel safe on the streets, how would you treat her? Would you push her away and tell her she shouldn't say things like that? Or would you be hurt by her expressing her fear? Yeah. Or would you lean in and try to protect her and console her, make her feel more comfortable? So sometimes that's hard when, I mean, because man, women, they can really sling some arrows. They know all the tender spots in our armor where they can slip a dagger right in there and just wiggle it around and eviscerate us.
Yeah.
So it's a beautiful journey to undertake. And again, it's not an easy one, but I think it's essential for us as a race, as a race of humans.
Yeah. Yeah, that's huge. Yeah, I would say that one of the most difficult undertaking of my life has been trying to create that safe space in my relationship and with, you know, being with a powerful woman and learning to move towards that. Because I've always ran, ran in the other direction and just like trying to stay and just listen to what she's really saying and like why she's saying it right now and like, what's she pointing at? You know, like what you're saying, read between the lines. Because the lines themselves are not always the thing. It's not always the line, right?
Exactly. I just want to say one more thing about that. As men, we want to play a game that we can win. So the problem is that safety for women isn't a game that you can ever just achieve and say, I did it. She feels safe. No more. Yeah. I don't have to worry about that anymore. That's the masculine in us wants to check that off the list. But it's not a checking off the list. It's a lifelong mission, a recommitment every single day to provide that space for your partner and for all women. So it goes a little bit against our psyche. And that's where we have to shift out of our baseline mentality and realize that this is something that you undertake for the rest of your life. She could feel safe one day and not safe the next. And it's not necessarily because of anything you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lifelong process. And I will have your voice in my head the next time I'm sitting there thinking like, have I been doing this for nothing? I've blown it again. She's not safe again. Yeah.
Yeah. If only I could put my own voice in my head. I've got a ton of voices that have told me that. Sometimes it's hard to hear them when the daggers are flying, but man.
We're going to use each other. Great, man. Yeah. Really great to have you on the show and have this conversation. Yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate the time you put into service to your community, Jetty, and what you're doing in the world, the torch you're carrying, and you're clearly a great father and trying to create a better world for your kids. And I respect that, man. Thank you for doing what you do with Rising Man.
Thanks, bro. Yeah, man, doing my best. That's all we can do out here. And likewise, man, thank you for carrying the torch up in Vancouver, our neighbors to the north, up in Canada, man. Yeah. I really love what you guys are creating up there. Respect it a lot. And yeah, looking forward to bringing what we're doing down here up there and exchanging culture too. That's another important one, man, is exchanging culture and having that conversation across boundaries and borders and language barriers, et cetera.
Yeah, love it. I'm really stoked for that. So if people want to follow what you're doing, get in touch with you, listen to your show, where do they go?
Yes, well, the Rising Man podcast is all over iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to them. So go ahead and check it out. Instagram at Jetty Azuma. We put out some sound bits for the podcast on a separate account at Rising Man Podcast. I'm on Facebook, Jetty Azuma. You guys can send me messages because I'm one of those dudes that will respond. And, you know, just be on the lookout for things we're doing. I have a feeling that we're going to bring Call of the Warrior up to Vancouver. Ben and I are going to talk about that. Hopefully sometime next year in 2020. And if anybody's interested in fasting, coming out for a ritual, rite of passage to get clarity in your life, then also hit me up. That program we have is called Compass.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Beautiful. Find your compass. Yeah. Find your direction. Love it. Thanks, Jetty. Thanks for coming on the show and love to have you on again sometime. Thanks, man. Have a great day.
Yes, sir.